Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. I am Lauren Penny, and this is the Talk with Penny show. I want to thank you for calling in and listening in and let you know that I am on the road heading back east. I hope that the technology will hold out throughout the whole show. But if you'd like to call in, this is an open line show. So please do at area code 267-521-0167, area code 267-521-0167. And if you need a toll-free line, the toll-free line is area code 855-346-3351. That's 855-346-3351. So I hope you all had a good Independence Day yesterday. I think one of the things that was important that we held the show and talked about how many people do not have their freedom in the United States. And, you know, Anthony and Iman, I want to thank you both for calling in, and Anthony for sharing your experiences with the court and what's been happening with your fight in trying to get free from the involuntary outpatient commitment. And so I really appreciate that you have shared so much with people. And again, my rage and my concern for what it means that somebody has to sit and listen to them being accused of a quote-unquote mental illness with no evidence of such a thing called mental illness existence, and yet to lose your freedom and your right to, based on this, it just is every American should really needs to be aware of what can happen to anybody, and the idea that you know what was shared about having the police called on you because you wanted to go to a family event instead of what was mandated to you by the court for that day, and to just have moved the appointment to a different day, I just think it's so horrifying. I do want to say that if you want to call in, the number to call is area code 267-521-0167, and the area toll-free number is 855-346-3351. And I hope that you can hear me. And I see there are a couple of people online, and I'm guessing that you would be telling me that you couldn't hear me if you couldn't hear me. So I'm going to keep on going with that. So, you know, I went back to the Flora Psychiatric Museum today to just double-check a couple of the exhibits. For anybody who maybe not have been listening over the last couple of days, this is part of where I've been. Why I went to the Dory was to go to talk with the executive director there and obviously look at the new exhibit sites of what the Flora Psychiatric Museum has put together in the last year, but also to talk about the possibility of doing an exhibit based on the findings from the B-Boys dissertation research process. And she was very open to that. And, you know, my challenge is trying to figure out how to get something from more than 600 pages into something that is visual. And she said that a good test of a museum exhibit is if somebody was whirling through the museum on roller skates, would it catch their eye? And so this is now how I'm trying to think. I'm very excited because we're going to be able to do a video, an 8 to 10 minute long video based on the data from D-Voice, specifically for the Flora Psychiatric Museum. And I am really, really excited about that, and I think that's awesome. But I also want to put together some kind of visual interpretation of what our movement is like and why it exists. And so what I suggested was some aspect of how people are turned into mental patients, and that would be one of the places where restraint, seclusion, and electroshock, lobotomy, insulin shock, etrazole, aversive, all of those kinds of horrifying tortures that we're subjected to can come in to play. And then also I wanted to have something in the exhibit that was about the liberation movement dating back to the 19th century. And so she seemed very, very keen on that idea, and including some information about the Opal, which was the 10-volume journal that was written by the inmates of the Utica State Lunatic Asylum from 1851 to 1860. And so I'm really hopeful about that. But I have a challenge to audience members. If you could put something visual in a museum about psychiatry, about either the experiences of having been psychiatrized, or about the liberation movement, or the politics and economic, social, cultural, what visual thing would you have in a museum? So I'm taking suggestions, and I'm hoping that this will generate a lot of conversation. If you'd like to call in, the number is area code 267-521-0167. And toll-free is area code 855-346-3351. And remember, it's either pressing 1 or star 1, depending on, I don't know what, but people seem to report that pressing 1 or pressing star 1 gets them to flag that they're interested in talking. And so I can see that there are several people on the line. And if you want to talk at any point in time, just please press star 1 or 1. If I'm not picking you up right away, because that might mean that I'm not seeing it. Okay, so the Flores Psychiatric Museum. Yes. Now, the Flores Psychiatric Museum is also part of St. Joseph's Museum. And in the larger St. Joseph's Museums, they have things like doll collections and Native American history, and a history of things in Missouri. And then they also have the Black Archives. And so I went up today to the Flores Psychiatric Museum to check out some of the exhibits that they have there, particularly the one on the liberation movement and the civil rights movement for African Americans. And so I'm really excited because that's kind of along the lines that we were talking about doing for people who have psychiatric histories in one of the exhibits. And I was, you know, playing in my mind of how that might look and timelines and trying to imagine how would you make this a reality for somebody in a visual way. So seeing how they had set up the timeline in the Black Archive room on the civil rights movement, I feel like I'm right in line in general with how to go about doing that. And if you want to see pictures of those, if you check out my Facebook page, it's the pictures that I posted today, and included things like shackles and chains that slaves were held in. And I think that this is really important because downstairs in the Flores Psychiatric Museum, you know, from the Black Archives, are all of the restraints that I posted yesterday, you know, restraint rings and you know, wrist cuffs and such. And so it's the same chains. I mean, the chains may look different in some ways, but not really. And then the chemical chains, of course, that, you know, the chemical restraint, the more modern way of doing these today. But the crossovers are clear, and certainly the Z-Voice research did quite a bit of this because for those of you who don't know, one of the main theoretical pushes that we were looking for was to see if we would be able to draw a parallel between what William Cross Jr., 1971 Black Liberation Psychology, and the experience of going from a mental patient toward a human again. And certainly, you know, B-Boy spends a lot of time identifying slavery and making parallels, you know, and further trying to expand on the work that I did in 2008, which you can find in the Journal of Radical Psychology, on psychiatric slavery. And so I feel like it's a really amazing culminating point of being able to bring in this history of the lunatic liberation movement from the 19th century, the comparison to slavery, and the current the oppression that people have faced throughout time and throughout all the name changes, state hospitals and mental hygiene and mental illness, psychiatric and behavioral health or whatever they're going to try to call it next. And to really see the reflection back to the timeline of the civil rights movement that was in the Black Archives and how easily we can follow that same pattern and provide that same type of information to visitors in the museum because we have it and because it's more evidence of our movement being a civil rights movement and a liberation movement that even in a museum exhibit, we can follow line by line of how other liberation movements are presented in their history. And I think that's pretty amazing. I also think that like one of the things that we're going to be putting forward are photographs, little pins. I told her about the buttons that, like, for example, that the Alliance had made, and for donations, were able to invest in their space at Utica, at the Alliance headquarters. You know, the buttons that say things like "Stop Forced Mental Health Treatment" or "No More Psychiatric Torture," or you know, any of those the psychiatry stuff that the stuff starts with a P. You know, those little pins. And so if anybody's got any of this kind of memorabilia for movement that you would like to digitize or, you know, talk with me about maybe how it can be put into this particular exhibit, which I think would be at least six months, maybe even a year off. I'm not sure what their scheduling is like, but I know that there's a new exhibit that's there right now called Gray Matters, which is really an artistic interpretation of psychiatry, and there were a lot of really powerful pieces in it, and how people experience what is called depression. And so I think that you know, there's a lot of room for movement, and we have time to really try to put together treatments that the museum would find accessible and useful and something that they would want to have exhibited. And so I'm very excited to be in these talks. If you'd like to call in, the number is area code 267-521-0167, area code 267-521-0167, and the toll-free line is area code 855-346-3351. And if you want to talk, if you're online and you'd like to talk, please press either *1 or 1 to call attention. And I am hoping that this technology is working because we move forward. So, and I'd like to just hear, because I've been kind of offline for the last few days, I'm really a little unsure as to what's going on. I know that, for example, with the Murphy bill, that they were supposed to be writing the Murphy-Barber compromise thing during the 4th of July recess, which, you know, always concerns me because I thought liberties but just in the nick of time of suggesting that there might be technical difficulties, there were clear ones. So we got cut off, but I'm back in now. So anyway, this Murphy bill with the national involuntary outpatient commitment laws, this is just going to be such a problem for us if this kind of thing passes, and it's going to be really scary to see what Barber and Murphy together come up with as non-controversial, because I think that many of us will find what they find non-controversial some of the most controversial things that we could ever imagine. And so I think we need to keep an eye on that. I also want to just talk briefly about the electroshock issues and remind people about this new informed consent brochure that's coming out and called Gray Matters, which ironically is the same name as the exhibit at the Florida Psychiatric Museum. And also about ECTjustice.com, where there is Deborah Schwartz-Puff is putting together a survey to people who are survivors of electroshock, trying to collect information so that we would be able to then maybe present it to government agencies or other people in power to try to eliminate this from happening. And there's a wealth of information on ECTjustice.com for people and places to get connected into and some resources available. So to remember that site. And then also, July 11th to 12th at Utica, New York, will be an organizing meeting at the headquarters of the Mental Patients Liberation Alliance in Utica. You can get the Alliance's phone number at area code 800-654-7227. And then I want to invite you all and remind you all about the Steel Days, which will be July 13th through the 16th. In front of the New York State Office of Mental Health in Albany, New York. That's 44 Holland Avenue, Albany, New York, July 13th through the 16th. We sit vigil for 72 hours because that is how long that we can be detained, assessed, treated, and determined as to whether or not we need to be institutionalized. This is not about involuntary outpatient commitment, that this can happen to somebody. This can happen to anybody, even if you have no psychiatric history whatsoever. You can be detained for minimally 72 hours. And so we sit silent, we sit vigil to break the silence about psychiatric oppression and celebrate the human spirit. And so I think it's a really amazing event. And it definitely recharges me every year, and you can make some really great connections, and I think it's a great thing to do and a wonderful way to speak out. People can also find more information on Facebook about it at the Alliance's 34th annual The Steel Day vigil and demonstration. There, one of the things that we do every year is reaffirm the Declaration of Principles from 1982, and that's a really powerful experience. And so if you go to Facebook and check it out, if you want to support it virtually, if you live too far to come to New York and be with us for any amount of time, you can join in spirit, and your organization can even co-sponsor the event, or as an individual, you can be an individual endorser. It's free, but all you're doing is saying that you're supporting what it is that the Alliance is doing. And again, you can reach the Alliance at area code 800-654-7227. And I can't believe it's coming up. It's already going to be this week. And so that should be quite an amazing event. And then from July 24th to July 27th, is Mind Freedom International's 2014 Creative Revolution Conference. in Connecticut at Wisdom House. And the keynote speakers will include Bob Whitaker, who is the prize-winning journalist, author of Anatomy of an Epidemic and Mad in America, and Mary Ellen Copeland of the Wellness Recovery Action Planning, RAP Plan, will be the keynotes. And then there'll be tracks on hearing voices, coming off psychiatric drugs, open dialogue, peer respite, and Soteria House. And Soteria House, the place of the Seven Dwarves, trying to remember all of these things. And so bear with me, because I'm not in front of my computer today. And so that will be July 24th through 27th. And then July 28th to the 31st is Youth Power University, which will be held at St. Rose College in Albany, New York. And Youth Power has organized two different courses that people 18 to 30 years old can take, one on peer advocacy and one on systems advocacy. And students in Youth Power University will have the ability to sleep in the dorms at St. Rose College and eat meals in the dorms, or, you know, on campus. And that should be a great event also. And so I see there's a whole lot of people who are in, and area code 661. Area code 661, your line is open.
Good evening. This is Tim Nolan calling from St. Paul, Minnesota. That's, I guess, Skype. You don't know how that's ever going to come up. But I had, there was a gal that, Mary Maddock, was a guest on my radio show. I do a blog talk radio on Wednesday nights at 10 o'clock Central Time. And my area of expertise and focus is psychiatric. And I was a lab rat myself personally for 8 years, from 1996 to 2004. But I just listened. I was listening before I called in your announcements, and we're both we're on the same page. And for any of your listeners, if they want to go to newsboy407.blogspot.com, and you'll see how I've lined up all of ones that you've talked about, Robert Whitaker and Dr. Peter Gletsky from Denmark. And then also what's going on with the University of Minnesota adult psychiatry. Boy, you got a lot. I get a lot of static.
Yeah, we're actually literally mobile.
Okay.
We're literally on the road doing the show. So yeah, every now and then I hit a mountain or something.
Okay.
And it,
yeah.
And it,
roll up the
and
windows
cut
and set off the air, right?
Yeah. Exactly. And so actually, Tim, I do follow you, and so thanks for calling in. That's great.
Okay.
And Mary Maddock is quite an amazing woman.
It's really incredible, isn't it?
She really is an inspiration. And Mind Freedom International, Mind Freedom Ireland out there, always doing the thing, always hitting the streets. And getting the word out, it's really nice to be connected with you. You said something about the University of Minnesota?
Yeah, the University of Minnesota Adult Psychiatry. That's how I connected. There was an article back in Mother Jones back in 2010, and I literally had met with Dr. Carl Elliott, an MD, PhD in bioethics, and what they did to this one young man against his will and all the psychotropic drugs. And he was in a sober housing situation, and he literally did helter-skelter with himself and almost cut off his head. And the way that's been dragged through everything, but we finally got the Fox affiliate in Minneapolis is doing, Jeff Balling is really doing a fantastic job. I was with them, in May, the anniversary, the 10-year anniversary, and we tried to attempt to bring a casket into the, they call the courtroom of the Board of Regents. and naturally they stopped them at the door. But one of the professors, Professor Turner, testified and attempted to bring across the points, and then the chair of the committee cut him off, and it's just so upsetting. But the most recent stuff that's really positive and it's really getting some teeth into the issue is former Governor Arne Carlson is a University of Minnesota graduate, and he wrote several letters to the board and met with the president of the university. So, and then also now the state of Minnesota legislative auditor is actually looking at the issue since June 18th, so it's very gratifying, but it's just trying to take on pharmaceutical. It's such a lucrative and such a negative and such a it's almost like taking on the military industrial complex. So that's two competing forces, and that's sort of what I my field of. Go ahead.
No, your field of.
Okay. Yeah, because in my background, I've worked been around the recovery community was, 43 years in January, and I've worked in my own recovery and then also working in the field professionally, and that's, I got a chuckle. And doing your timeline, in 1987, I thought I was set for life. I was running a big clinic in Arizona, and that's when the hospital came up with a whole new philosophy. They'd introduced a new administrator, then they were going to switch from behavioral health. We had five outpatient clinics, and they were going from behavioral health to physical medicine. And that's the onslaught of Prozac. There's a doc even wrote an article about that, about the survivors of Crown Zero. And I could not believe it. There, 45 of the sick bricks. But then, bouncing around from pillar to post and being in private practice, I left the Valley at Arizona, and I went up to Colorado, and then I came back in 96. I got caught in my own spider web, what the hospital was doing back in 1987. But I can speak professionally, I can speak personally, and how psycho-wacko-tropic the pharmaceutical is the most pathetic organized crime organization around.
It really is a criminal enterprise. There's no choice around it.
And also, that it's just something. When the more that I cannot believe it. It's just because I had a situation with my mother and worked through her losses and before she died and yada yada yada. But I've just been coming around with more like-minded people that are coming. Actually, there is actually going on an awakening. When you get 70% of the population on prescription meds and more people are becoming aware of it, they're assessing what's in their medicine cabinet, so it's really encouraging. It's frustrating, which is normal anytime you bring about change, but there's safety in numbers, and with all the stuff going on across the globe, I think we've got to remain optimistic. But we got these competing forces that control everything, the media, all the propaganda, the military, yada, yada, yada.
It really is hard, especially with the media, and I think that's one of the reasons why I started to do this show, was because the onslaught of the propaganda is exactly what it is. And the coupling, the way that they have just been conditioning society to associate violence with anything psychiatric, and but the way they're pushing these laws through, just steamrolling it, and at the profit of who? At the profit of the industry, at the profit of the psychiatrist, at the profit of anybody else except who's being forced under this. And my big concern about that, they're coming after us. I don't know if I was locked up the first time when I was 15, so I've been battling with these people for decades now. And, the idea that that based on somebody's say-so, that they can, with no physical evidence, with no biological proof of any of this existing, that they can lock you up and put you on these mind-altering drugs that cause, severe bodily injury and the withdrawal is hellish and torture and restraints occlusion and electroshock. I mean, it just doesn't seem to end. And with no evidence that they can do this, it is these competing forces that are allowing this to happen to people. And, you know, the net is widening every time you turn around, with whole new groups of people being having to be assessed. And so, like, one of the things in New York that's just happened is that it unanimously passed the Senate and the Assembly that all pregnant women had to be screened for maternal depression because they're now arguing that postpartum depression actually starts during pregnancy, and the symptoms of it are panic or anxiety, and that we need to have all OBGYNs and pediatricians trained in these so that they can spot it in mothers who may be pregnant and make sure that they get treatment, and their children so that they can be early assessed for intervention. And in New York, there's public health law that if you have any psychiatric diagnosis, the state can take your kid away from you for no reason.
It's worse than Nazis.
And to try to educate people about it, and then they use these, you know, this is the conditioning. They use these horror stories of these selected individuals who have done heinous things to their children. And, you know, that, and they tie it in. So, you know, anytime they're talking about the loss of civil liberties, they immediately throw in some heinous act to justify the need for this and to condition a population to believe that this is necessary and good and this is the benevolent thing to do. But you know, people aren't going to realize it, and with the electronic medical records, it really is East Germany. I mean, we really are there, I guess.
Yeah, and then it's also like with the NDAA and that legislation and the crowd of the old cronies in Washington that authored that bill and fast-tracked it through, that anybody can, like you said, anybody can be picked up and taken away and, habeas corpus, and it's really, really scary. And it's just such a small percentage of people that are really the evil forces that have that much clout. It's like, you know, and it's I'm not anti-Semitic, but the Rothschilds are the Zionists, and they own America, they own the globe, and you follow the money, and they want, their agenda is to eliminate as many people as possible. But it's scary. If I was a woman and I'm with carrying a child, I'm pregnant, and then all of a sudden I'm introduced with some pharmaceutical, and that child is already chemically dependent before it's even born. That is just total madness. That's crazy. Yeah, that's how powerful pharmaceutical is.
Right.
And their profit was...
Oh, the profit.
Their profit last year was $711 billion, so they got a lot of money to spread around. And it isn't a charitable.
Right. And then you have groups like the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI. If you Google NAMI, NAMI bipolar pregnancy, it'll come up with a page of NAMI's suggestions for this. And so they say that the drugs are probably too dangerous for a fetus, so what you should be using is electroshock. So I don't know who thinks that, like, anesthesia and muscle relaxants and shooting electricity through a pregnant woman's brain is a good idea. These people should be held criminally responsible. It really is.
I testified about how many years ago with NAMI, I just got a lot of glaring eyes. And NAMI is all bankrolled by pharmaceutical, and that's just kind of the distraction they set up, like they're these do-gooder organization, and it's a fraud. It's actually a fraud.
It really is. And I don't know how to, trying to get to the mainstream public or the the media, the news, and to have them. But, you know, they're all being funded by the pharmaceutical industries. Who's paying their commercials?
Oh, yeah, really.
They're not going to, you know, if you want to talk Rico, I mean, this is, you know, this is racketeering and criminal enterprise. And it's on the back of
people.
Because
they're more, you talked about the mob and the organized crime, like Al Capone and how brutal he was. But my God, there's been more people died and killed from pharmaceutical than any of the mobs, all the mobs across the globe, the Sicily and all that stuff.
It really is. I mean, a 25-to-30-year loss of life for somebody on psychiatric drugs. Like, how is that? That is like negligent homicide. If you hit somebody in a car accident or something where you were liable, and 20 years later they die, that's murder. Like, that's you're still held accountable for that death, and nobody in this field is held accountable. Not anybody. Only the peers, people who work in peer positions.
And I had a situation, too. It's just so bizarre that this doctor, because I used to go physical every year, and then that's all bullshit, excuse the expression. But anyway, he's just trying to really, I really mean it, Tim. It's really good to see you. We're getting really cozy. He said, you know, I think you should get a pneumonia shot. I got against my better judgment, I got a pneumonia shot. Less than a year, I wound up with pneumonia. And I went back and they did this chest x-ray, and they prescribed this Lavaquin. Lavaquin's a synthetic antibiotic, and I had a reaction from that. I still try to get all that stuff out of my system, the tendonitis. I cannot believe it.
It really is a business. It's such a business. And then, like the business plan of Eli Lilly, that they make Zyprexa that causes diabetes, and then the other major drug that they sell is the diabetes pen. Like, why is nobody holding these people criminally responsible for all of the lives that are being destroyed?
And then speaking of that, too, we don't have at the federal level, Eric Holder is notorious. I call him a bench sitter. Waco, Oklahoma City, that's why the powers to be have those people in those positions. He just put up like a red flare up there and went after Goldman Sachs, like, ha, 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 ha. You know, and that didn't absolutely go anywhere. That's part of the Federal Reserve, the follow the money, the World Bank, and, oh, boy.
Yeah,
unreal.
And then you've got this shadow government running everything. And so, you know, who really got the power? Who's really got the power? Who do you really go to say, hey, this has got to stop? Because they're not going to, you know, what interest do they have in us?
We're a liability, and that's so sad. You got to look at the big picture. We are a liability. We're ants under their feet. And look at what's going on with the Palestinian people in the Middle East and all the, you know, it's like the Wednesday night fights. It's Syria, then it's Egypt, then it's Palestine, then it's just sometimes, you know, ignorance is bliss. And I don't even watch TV anymore, and I don't read print. So I'd really be a basket case. Like my son said one time, he said that when he was coming off all his street stuff, he said, Dad, who are you yelling at? And I'm yelling at the TV. Every time that baby Bush was on, I just get so enraged. He's such an idiot. And that's the way that, you know, I don't want to get political, but that's why they had him there, because Cheney ran Washington, and Cheney's still calling the shots.
Yeah, and how do you do it without getting political? How do you,
really?
I mean, at the end of the day, we can talk until we're blue in the face, but there's this other layer that if you don't address the political realm of this, and that these people, that these politicians are allowed to just lie. You just lie.
They recruit them that way. Like Obama was recruited through the trilateral, Kissinger and Brunetsky and everything, because the guy could walk and talk and chew gum. And it's sad. I believed what he was saying. He was speaking from the heart, but I, I found out I was a guest on Susan Lindauer has been a guest on my show when I used to do Global Peace, and Andrew Craig was on the same time. Andrew Craig is an insider, and I recommend that people want information. Andrew Craig wrote the book Presidential Puppetry, and it's all spelled out. He's got in all those 20 years he's been in Washington, and I love that kind of book because it's like a reference material or encyclopedia.
So the president puppet, what?
Presidential puppetry.
Presidential,
presidential
puppetry.
Puppetry, and it's Andrew Craig. It's K-R-I-E-G. And just Google that, and you'll have the links and everything. He's been a guest on Webster Tarpley, and he's got a neat little infomercial one on the stuff, and it's a really incredible book.
He writes
on a regular basis, too.
And I think that is, I just think that the idea of puppetry in general is, you know, that that's part of the problem, is that everybody's walking around following orders and, you know, pulling strings here and there, and nobody wants to take responsibility for it. Nobody will say who's actually pulling the strings, but you can't ever get to, like, the person who actually can make a decision, because nobody seems to either know or want to say who that person is. And it's really troublesome. Because you have, like, this Murphy bill. I don't know if you've been following this H.R. 3717 Murphy bill thing with the national mandate for involuntary outpatient commitment laws and slicing SAMHSA and, you know, doing away with all alternatives and creating veterans' mental health courts and all kinds of crap that this bill
does. That's one thing, you know, seeing in Minnesota, speaking of the vets court, in Hennepin County and Ramsey County now, they have a special court for vets. And that had a deal that this guy, they're going to give him, they're going to execute him or whatever state it was. And they found out, here's a guy that's put his life on the line to be in the military, and they want to execute him, but they gave him life imprisonment. But what's going on with the vets court. It's really a positive experience. And the way, look, if there is an example, the way they're treating them, they're medicated military, and that's why they're having so many suicides. They were issued Prozac and then amphetamines and then Ambien.
Right.
And that's like they want to eliminate the military. They want to automate it, robotic it, drone it.
Yeah. Right.
You got to laugh because it's so pathetic. You have to laugh to keep maintain your own sanity.
It's just heart-wrenching that this is what's going on. And then, you know, you hear these people and they're like saying the words of like the Treatment Advocacy Center or Tory, and you know, and it's like. It's like how are Tory's words coming out of your mouth, Senator Murphy? How is that, Representative Murphy? How is that possible? How are you saying like exact sentences off of his website? How are these people, coming in? I want to bring in area code 202. Your line is open. Tim, please stay on. 202,
sure.
Your line is open.
Yeah, I've been listening to the other caller from Minnesota, and everything he's saying is. So true. I'm literally underground, so I might get cut off. I'm in the subway system. My train is going to come in 9 minutes. But I just wanted to throw out there, we may have to do something underground because, you know, people want to come off these psychiatric medications. They really, if they go to their doctor, some doctors will help them and others will not. And, you know, I don't advise anyone to go off cold turkey, but... Has anyone, any callers out there, maybe heard of any places where people could go so they could do this, you know, safely, maybe over the period of weeks or months? I know we had a caller the next few this past week who said that they had to go to another state. They had to go to Michigan so they could get detoxed off the psychiatric medication.
Because a caller, if you go to my blog, Angel of Mercy, Big Pharma, Peter Bergen, I put this post to the link, and you can go on to his site, and he has a booklet that's available, and he recommends for people coming off of any kind of meds. And it's just, it's really, because he is one of really high integrity of a psychiatrist. He's very well thought of. He's very progressive in testifying in cases against the pharmaceutical. And that's just newsboy407.blogspot.com. And it's the very top story. You can click on that link, and it'll take you right into his site, and you'll be able to get that information.
Is that Peter Bragan, Tim?
Yeah, Peter Bragan, yeah.
Oh, phenomenal. I didn't realize he had a new booklet on coming off psychiatric drugs. That's great.
Yeah, because you click on the
deal. He is one of the people that he testified against the, I can't remember what company it was, and they got a huge settlement.
Yeah, he's had a terrific, he's had more than one case. Just recently was a $700,000 settlement on one case, but he's gone after the big guns, Eli Lilly and so on. And then you go to his site, once you click onto that, you'll see on the important legal cases and then also the booklets and stuff. But boy, it's just such a relief to have a psychiatrist with to take.
Yeah, more and more of them are coming to that conclusion.
Yeah.
You say no.
I know,
sir.
I have a very, more and more of them are sick and tired of being, giving up,
so
really.
Tired.
Mm-hmm.
But see, there are just
the three of us right now,
there's a solution. We focus on solutions, and the word of mouth is still the most powerful media.
That is absolutely true, and that for people to know that they're not alone out there, and there are people that you can connect with, and that there are resources available, and even if it may not be in the mainstream, it's still out there, and that's one of the reasons why I really believe we absolutely must be talking. It's like our moral imperative that we have to keep speaking out and letting people know, because it's a huge profit. And, I thank God for Peter Bragan's Toxic Psychiatry back in the early 90s. That book absolutely saved and changed my life. But if I didn't stumble over it, this is why we need to keep on speaking out, and I can't wait to go look at what his newer information is. So thanks for sharing that, Tim. That's great.
Yeah, because if you go to it, it's right on the very first story I posted yesterday. And you just click psychiatric drug facts on that link there, and you'll go right to the stuff. That is just like finding the gold mine or something. It's just neat. And then with Robert Whittaker and Peter Gutsky, and banging your head up against one, all of a sudden, all of a sudden I'm surrounded with like-minded people. And these are really icons. They're really, really powerful people. And they're positive. They're are the ones, the revolutionaries.
Yeah, for sure. And so I think that people should know that's out there like that and available. And that there are places in the industry that aren't financially profit driven. Of people who are really doing good things and who are trying to reach out. And, but we really do need, a network of psychiatrists and lawyers. Because this, I don't know, Tim, if you've ever actually, witnessed an involuntary outpatient commitment hearing, but I just was at one again the other day, and it is the scariest thing in the world to have... I'm just watching, right? I'm thinking to myself, yep. All right, don't get arrested, Lauren. Don't get arrested. It's not going to help anything. And that there's you have a defense lawyer, there's a prosecuting lawyer, there's a judge, there's a stenographer, there are bailiffs, there are police with guns all over the place and wearing bulletproof vests. And you have a judge saying that you have been deemed mentally ill and that because of that, you need to, you know, comply with whatever this stuff is. And with no evidence, with not a drop of evidence, well, what evidence do you have for this, doctor? Oh, well, I asked a question, and they didn't really answer. That's your evidence.
And that's just like you're saying, there is a, because a friend of mine is just retired as a Hennepin County judge, and he pioneered the drug court and DWI court. And I said, John, I've seen all those years, all the dysfunction going on has been job security. He said, boy, you got that right. I can hardly wait to retire. And that's like the law enforcement and the judge or the prosecutor, the defense, they decided in the judge's chamber, then they go in the courtroom for the drama and for the record. But this is what you get people that are, because even that crazy McCain and Lindsey Graham and all those people in Washington, that the attorneys that authored all those bills, the term is called belligerent. And the belligerents, what they call the indigenous people.
Hello? Okay. Hi, I don't know what happened, but we just lost.
Well.
Hi, Kim, are you there? I'm sorry, we lost.
I was muted, and then that gal was waiting for the subway.
Yeah, I hit the wrong button. Yep, sorry. So if you could just repeat what you were just saying, because I think we've got you back now.
Yeah, okay, because I just wondered, that other caller, that she must have got the subway, must have come by, because she said about 9 minutes. Did she show up on your board?
I'm not seeing two, right? No, the subway must have cut off. Or something.
Okay.
But
it's just getting back the way the system is designed. It's all. I think the main word that what we're looking at is control, mind control, the courts of law. That's all that stuff is decided in the judge's chamber. Then they go in the courtroom for the drama and for the record. And like I heard you say, too, the stenographer and the bailiff, and the courtroom is very intimidating. And that's part of the control factor.
Unreal. And it's also more people who are getting paid, more people who are becoming dependent on this line of money coming in for these court-ordered hearings. But, you know, this thing that you say about this backroom deal and what they're calling the black robe effect of the power that just the judge has just out of being a judge, right? How is this democracy? How is this in any way something that is considered an American concept? You know, we have a big show coming up on July 9th on the judicial accountability and the jury trial, and I think that people don't realize that when you say that this is done before you even go in, that they really are making deals prior to having the hearing. And even if you have somebody testifying on your behalf or any of that, but that's already wrapped into the deal. It's all done already.
Yep.
And so how is this American? How is this in any way a fair due process of any sort?
And it goes back to, like, look at the U.S. Supreme Court. That used to be the law of the land. They decided that Baby Bush would be better than Al Gore. They approved Obamacare, Citizens United. The fact that they approve Obamacare proves, without a doubt, it's profits before people. The HMOs, that one guy, the third highest paid was, what, $30 million 2 years ago? Right in Minnesota, William McGuire was a third highest paid HMO executive.
It really is. Yeah.
Oh, it all goes back to Fork and Road doing the timeline, because I'm a history buff. You do the timeline, all this stuff, you can look at the big picture. The Fork and Road is when Ronald Reagan was in office. and they went from the dumbing down of America and the numbing down of America. And also, look at, he was assassinated attempt on him 69 days into his office, into his term.
And that's the,
John
that's
Hinckley
the
Jr.
Bill,
was
right?
mind controlled. John Hinckley Jr.'s father was an oil executive, a friend of Daddy Bush.
And that's where the Bradley Bill comes from, that they all start
over
justifying, right? This is where the justification for them taking our guns away and for our Second Amendment rights to be stripped from us with no concern about anything. And, you know, I didn't realize that about Kingsley.
Yeah, because William McGuire was the third highest paid executive as far as the United Healthcare. Was not a hospital. United Healthcare is an insurance company out of Dallas, and they were buying up all the some of the hospitals not walking distance from where I live. And Minnesota Supreme Court put a hold on. He had set aside for his own feathering his own nest for $1.2 billion in stock options. $1.2 billion. Oh, just it. And he's still walking around free.
Right, and as are all these other people, and we're locked up.
The white collar crime, Wall Street, they got off Skype again. Look at Madoff. Madoff, if there was, all his records were in the Building 7, the 9/11. And that's why he walked on with such a smirk. There was a dedicated employee that had hard copy. Otherwise, he would have walked away with $60 billion. That's really something.
And then if you start talking about anything like this or anything around spirituality or you know, experiences that aren't within, Judeo-Christian kind of bounds, now all of a sudden you're psychotic, you're delusional, you're paranoid,
they've got the criteria. They have how many labels on us?
and if you disagree, that's the proof. I find myself in a position of where people say to me, well, what do you do? And I say, well, don't ever disagree with them. Say, yes, I need this, I want this. And I guarantee you they'll leave you alone. Because people who want it and who are trying to get help and who are trying to get assistance are refused. And if you refuse it, you're forced. And so how do you have any logic in this kind of system just needs to be torn down and people are paying with their lives and families are getting assistance from these pharmaceutical front places like NAMI.
And, you know, that's what I heard, you know, Jim Maddock, Mary's husband mentioned, you know, he believed in psychiatry, that, you know, that then all of a sudden he realized, something's wrong with this picture, you know. But you always held doctors, because one of the populations I worked with impaired positions, and all of a sudden here I am in the therapy sessions, I did an outpatient setting, and I'm surrounded by a room full of doctors, and I have people I had on pedestals. They were just simply, they write their own scripts. And they had to keep their habits going. It was unbelievable.
And, you know, because people want to pretend like this isn't like a street drug. This is a medication. This is a legitimate legal. And the way people are lied to about this is just horrifying. I think we have Yvonne back. 202 your line.
I'm here. I heard you when you said that I was back on. Yeah, I'm traveling the public transportation system in Washington. Yeah, I have counseled people all the time when they're getting ready to have operations. You should ask your physician what medications he is on. And I know this could be true because I had a roommate who was doing an internship in Washington many years ago, and you're right. They write their own prescriptions. You know, it's unheard of, but if you think about it, you talk about interns and residents working 12, 13, 14 hours. There's no way that you can do that without taking drugs. They're right there on prescription. They are some of the biggest abusers of the prescription pad. But people don't want to talk about that.
No. Because back in the early 60s, I was driving Amos to Minneapolis General, and that's when we had the interns riding with us. And that's why that I was on the uptake. I could ask them for a handful of amphetamines, and that's how we kept on going, and they kept on going. But we used to work 24-hour shifts.
Right. So I think, yeah, Yvonne, I'm just getting you on mute there because you got a lot of background noise. But pull back in a moment, if you will. But I think that this is an issue with where the psychiatrists or the doctors are taking whatever drugs they're taking at whatever pace they want to be taking them because nobody's monitoring them, you know, and they're certainly not monitoring themselves. What they, I don't know if you hear that, Tim, you said you were a history buff. Part of the reason that the American Psychiatric Association developed its code of ethics and its ethics committee was because Henry Cotton, the psychiatrist who was taking out all of our teeth and innards and everything else that Andrew Scull wrote about in Madhouse, that he had tried to get prior to the publication date of his article coming out, he had gotten some magazines to cover it. And so that was what developed the ethics committee. You know what I mean? Like, what this quote-unquote profession considers ethical and unethical and what people wind up getting, held responsible for or not, you know, dating back to the early 1900s. Same as, like, you know, John Watson wound up getting fired, finally, from Johns Hopkins because Adolf Meyer used the fact that he had gotten busted with a second affair on his wife as the excuse, but not because he was trying to condition fear into little Albert. You know what I mean? That wasn't unethical, now I've got a good out to get rid of you because you cheated on your wife the second time, so we can knock down that one. But what you did to that baby, don't worry about that. That's all fine. And when we're all lab rats, I mean, you said before, right? You were a lab rat. How do you mean?
Yep. Yeah, because just the experiment, I got all my medical records, and it's just something, I went through them all, and I had the death of my father, the death of my wife, and all these other situations in my life. I was, my lithium level was redlined, and there was a notation, and the doctor said, he just kind of, as I look back when I did my timeline, that he kind of chuckled. He said, oh, they're concerned, but I had over 20 different meds. Well, Butrin, Zoloft, lithium, Depakote, Ambien, Klonopin, all of this was just bizarre. Like when my wife died, my kids were too embarrassed to be with me because I had to sit in the back of church with two of my aunts. And then the same thing with my father, and I was a zombie. It was just unbelievable. I was fast-tracked in 3 weeks. I talked to one psychiatrist, and the Social Security couldn't believe it. I was fast-tracked. He asked me just a couple handful of questions. There wasn't any blood test, any family history, or nothing. But I've lived through it. I'm a professional expert witness. I'm an expert witness. I have been there, done that, and survived it.
Good for you.
And I attempted to talk to my county, the county commissioners as a body, and I was cut short, and I got so frustrated, I talked to who was my county commissioner, and she resigned. I showed her the evidence that I had. I was trying to get in the evidence.
And so
that's part of that's part of becoming aggressive, not being obnoxious, but being taking responsibility for our own health. Because I believe the doctors in the red, the American flag and apple pie and the presidents, or they were the God on earth and all that stuff. But boy, Rip Van Winkle's awakened. I hope I can awaken the rest of time.
Right. And that's, you know, before nobody knows what world they're living in, and then looks around and goes, well, where the hell am I, and where are all my friends and family?
Where'd everybody go? Where'd the clowns go?
it really is. And, you know, the idea of, like, these electronic medical records, you know, this is, like, something that I am so concerned about, because it just will follow you out. And then, you know, you go to a doctor for a health issue, and right up at top is that you have a psychiatric history. And so now, before you get any attention for your physical needs, you're going to have to, you know, defend yourself as normal, you know, or sane enough to get medical treatment, which is ludicrous. I mean, people have called this show, Tim, talking about, like, going to the doctor with either, like, visible things on their skin or, like, bleeding literally from, like, their nose and mouth, and having to go through a psychiatric evaluation before they would be given medical attention. Because the doctor in the ER saw that they had a psychiatric history in their chart. Like, this is, you know, they are killing us. And it's so concerning.
And as far as also the electronic charts and so on, there's also in there, they're trying to fight at the DNA. My grandson was born. I was always very vigilant, and all of a sudden they took him in the room and he was crying. I noticed that his heel was a little bit bleeding, and that's that they drew the DNA, and then they have that little chip they can put into a person's body that it's all of a sudden your electronic records can be accessed and added to and whatever. But it's so futuristic. It's really the here and now.
Right, and
it's
in Europe, they're doing it. Right, in England, I think it is that they're doing that. So all babies are microchipped at birth. It's legal to microchip people here. And then, I don't know if you saw that, you know, you mentioned concern about veterans. There's that DARPA, the Defense and Research Project Agency, or Advanced Research Project Agency of the military, a $70 million program to implant devices into the brains of veterans who have post-traumatic stress or psychiatric, you know, quote-unquote, symptoms. And this is to be able to see how, be able to in real time watch how chemical impulses are fired and how they can then reroute them. And so if they've announced, that they are implanting devices into the brains of veterans, and that's an official thing, and they've donated $70 million to it, and that's screwing with our chemical responses and electromagnetic waves and all this other stuff. How is it possible, then, that somebody like Alexis, who is saying that they've got something implanted in his brain and he's a veteran, why isn't that ever looked at again? Why isn't that ever... Do you know what I mean? The Washington Navy Yard situation? Why isn't, you know, anybody who's ever said, I've got something implanted in my brain, is just automatically considered as if they're quote-unquote psychotic? But here we are, and the military is implanting devices into the brains of veterans. And so that whole idea that this is not a legitimate thing, or this is science fiction or conspiracy theory or any of this kind of crap, it's eliminated, because there it is. They're doing it. They're actively doing it.
And that's such a buzzword, too. They throw that at you. Oh, you're one of those conspiracy nuts. You know, just like my younger brother is 5 years younger, and he still believes in the single bullet theory. And my mission is not to try and sell him on the truth. He's Vietnam, and I know he's finally got enough. He has diabetes, so he's going to be fast-tracked to get what he should have been entitled to a long time ago from Agent Orange. And then you hear they got the guys that they coming back with that cocktail of Prozac, amphetamines, and Ambien, and then they put them in a brain implant.
Right. And then they want to know why they want to kill themselves. And for
yeah, really. It's a salute. It's a way out. It's a light at the end of the tunnel.
So I don't know if you're familiar with Paula Joan Kaplan's work at all.
She was a guest on my show.
She's just amazing. And so that there are, you know, sometimes veterans call in, and we've done a couple of shows specific to issues that veterans are experiencing. And I just want people to know that there is hope and there is a way out. And there are these guides, like the new one from Reagan and the Icarus Project one on coming off psych drugs. There are ways to go about doing it.
Dr. Bragan was interviewed on InfoWars, and he talked about DARPA. And
okay.
my wife's sister, she was a nurse. She's retired now, and she worked at the Minneapolis VA, and she told me about the geriatrics where there's some of those guys, believe it or not, are still alive. They were lobotomized. They have the incision in the back of their neck. It's just so diabolical. It's so futuristic. It's actually in real time.
Great. And it's like the future is now. Here we are, people. Wake up.
Yeah, really. Yeah. 1984 was not intended to be an instruction manual.
Right. Oops. Well, maybe you let the oldest person know about that. But, so, what control do you have? What way do you have to really fight or get the word out? And this is why we need grassroots, close-knit social networks of people on the ground in reality, not up in, like, you know, but that we can create community amongst ourselves, that we can create support networks, and that we don't need to be relying on the government for these things. And whenever the government gets involved, it just seems to get all tripped up. So.
Because I had a banner I posted a couple of different times on Facebook. When government lies, democracy dies. And I'm 73. I was born before the first Pearl Harbor, and I've been lied my entire life. They knew about Pearl Harbor. They had advance warning. They provoked Japan to attack. Oh, it's just unreal. And that goes back to education. That's why the dumbing down of America. They want everybody to be docile, compliant, obedient workers. That's why they have bells in schools so they'll adapt to factories when they get out.
That's right. That's why they have bells on Fox News to condition people into fear. Look, it's time to be afraid. Look, it's time to be afraid. Like, don't move.
Yep.
Don't think. Don't move. And it works. And people, you know, slowly, where you start to think, like, even like with Obama, like, you know, oh, maybe this guy's really going to do something. Maybe this guy's really going to have the integrity to move through. And to, you know, and instead being an activist is now a felony. Like, how did this happen under Obama?
Yeah,
wait a second. Like, how is this, you know, and then we'll just get everybody high and nobody will notice what's going on. And
that's the way they want it. Either get you on illegal drugs, and that feeds and supports the CIA, or you get, you know, there's the legal and the illegal drug cartel.
Really, and the merging of it all now. And now all of a sudden this thing
and
that
Mike
was supposed
Cooper
to be dangerous
was a friend of mine. He was on to that the illegal drug cartel, and I still will not buy the fact after his arrest radio show on April 17th he committed suicide. I will not buy that. He and Jesse Ray, he was really a changed person. And then the guy that talked about how he committed suicide and all that was all planned. And that one business partner could very well trade into his operation. And I'm not cynical or skeptic, but I'm informed, and because I had been crime scene and arson in my working years, I've seen things that are right out there that the people are not.
Yeah, I don't know that I know what you're talking about, Tim.
That's something. Because I've had my life threatened to try and expose the illegal drug cartel, and I have to catch me if you can. You know, I'm stealing bases. I was at a fundraiser for Hennepin County Sheriff, and I was talking to some people about Afghanistan, and a guy came up, he said, if you put in a print where you're telling those people, they'll find you in a country road. And I said, is that a fact? I just didn't really care. And I said, and who are you? And he gave me his card. He was an attorney. And I said, what kind of law are you practicing? He said, what kind of law do you practice? He said, wills. And I found out his dad was an old ambulance chaser attorney and all that stuff. But then I talked to the Police Federation president, and I said, I'm working on the legal drug cartel. Oh, no, he said, good. He said, it's safer. Because I was out to find my source for my son's drug use, his drug crap back in 2014.
I understand a little. I think that's part of the reality is that people, when they speak out, are silenced and retaliated against.
Yep.
To the degree of what you're uncovering.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that, you know, DVoice, the research that I just finished, really showed was that the retaliation ranged from, like, losing some power in your job or losing your computer station or your ability to, you know, go around where you wanted to go around to, all the way to being reinstitutionalized and dropped, depending on how significant the wanting to get rid of you was. And so, you know, when somebody was really hitting on something that the people in power didn't want to know about, that person was put in an institution and drugged and named psychotic. And you know, and that's essentially what happened to Clifford Beers in the 1930s, right, where he disagreed with Meyer and wound up getting locked up in a institution and, you know, died there because he just, you know, trying to protect the rights of people who are psychiatrically disabled. And, you know, but this idea that if you speak out, then you're in danger, and that danger can include physical danger of your life.
There's been so many different people I know, and it's just almost, I could almost develop a paranoia. People I know and stuff just in Minneapolis that died very young. It's just really strange because I've been very verbal and I had a chance to talk at the state, federal level, state level, county level, and all that. And it's just it's strange. Like my college records from mortuary school in Dallas have been purged. And that's another whole story about the Kennedy deal. Yeah, but I guess I'm just playing my cards closer to my vest and just staying within the safety range of being surrounded by these incredibly dedicated doctors that I finally feel I'm in a safe zone.
Incredibly dedicated doctors. Yeah. So, and I think that for people who haven't been there or who people who have only been involved on a very voluntary basis, you know, to really truly understand what happens to you when this is done involuntarily and you have no recourse and all you can do is, you know, comply or have it become, you know, worse by the second as to what it is they're going to do with you until you do comply. I don't think the average person gets the horrors of that experience, why this really torture and crimes against humanity that, you know, need to be stopped. And even people who, you know, think that they've given informed consent and then find out afterwards that their consent wasn't informed at all, that kind of betrayal that people experience and it ranges from the drugs all the way to electroshock or vagus nerve stimulator or whatever, new magnetic crap that they're doing, that, you know, whatever their new next thing is, that people are consistently being misinformed about what it is they're being subject to or outright over their objection court ordered this. And that there are alternatives.
I heard you mention two you know, somebody's going to the ER after an auto accident, and all of a sudden they have a resident psychiatrist there right away before they even treat the trauma. And it's just something that's just. Then you sign these deals. You don't have a clue. You're half dazed from the trauma of the accident. You're signing something, and you read all the fine print, and it's just you signed away your life.
Right, and all you need is one person to say, maybe this person needs to be inspected, and then, you know, there's the next doctor to come in, and the doctor's job is to get people in the hospital. Like, that's their job. Their job isn't to police people.
Yep.
Especially now with the way that they frame liability and all of this. You know, your questions, you're committed. That's it. There's not going to be this, we'll let them out and see how it goes, and, you know, maybe this is just, you know, an off-nighter. And all based on verbal answers to verbal questions that are, like, you know, that's the other side of it. Like, if you're honest with a doctor, and, you know, the doctor says, well, you know, you feel like you'd be better off if you weren't alive, and it's like, well, yeah, like, right now I'm kind of feeling that because everything really sucks and my life is falling apart and I got nothing. And I've lost everything, and, you know, and now all of a sudden, now you're locked up, you know, and it was like, no, I wasn't really maybe thinking that at all, but you asked me, and so I told you, and now I'm going to suffer for it. And, you know, the idea that, you know, locking somebody up in a mental institution and putting them in solitary confinement is somehow supposed to make that person want to live, like, that's the most backward, you know. I don't know what these doctors
are saying. What you're just saying, too, I got a picture in my mind. We've gone full circle. When Reagan, during the Reagan years, that they opened up all the institutions and let these people out, now they're putting back, they got people. Look at the prisons are for profit. Hospitals are for profit. They come under the umbrella of nonprofits, the Good Samaritans and all that, but it's all about profit. Make sure they almost have an X-ray machine. They want a picture of your wallet. They don't want to know what to
do.
And if you have insurance, do they have a program for you? Oh boy.
And miraculously will extend until your insurance runs out. And if it's involuntary outpatient is required, well, we're going to make sure that that insurance is going to pay for that for as long as that is necessary. And cash cow, here we are. And if you challenge it, if you say, well, you know, psychiatry doesn't really have any evidence or any of that, they say that that's being political and that a courtroom isn't the place to do that. So where are you supposed to get a defense? How are you supposed to get defended? Defended against what? You know?
And that one I mentioned earlier about that Lavaquin, the synthetic antibiotic, there was a federal judge who, after he retired from the bench, started the law firm, and his daughter is cherry picking the cases for the Lavaquin, and the ones that, you know, they cherry pick that they can bullwinkle, and you know that, gee, we got a lot of money tied up in depositions and court costs and eat up whatever settlement they would get. And they get a kickback from the insurance company for more claims that they distract.
Yeah, and this is real, and people don't want to.
Oh, really?
You know, they don't. They'd rather not know this. They'd rather just think that, you know, the doctors are good and the pharmaceutical industries are fabulous because they're coming up with new cures and everybody just wants to help And you know, how dare you question me, a doctor, and say that there is some kind of conspiracy here or something? And it's worse than that because it's all out in the open. It's not even you know, like, something that people are trying to hide, that they're blatantly out of two sides of their mouth. No, we have no evidence. Yes, we're going to act like we do.
Just like, you ever in a doctor's waiting room, look at all the magazines and how many different, there's ads for every kind of pharmaceutical deal. Oh.
Yeah. I mean, Jim, why is it that I can't prove that the spiritual experience that I had was real? I have no evidence that that was real. They have no evidence that this biological brain disease is real. Why is it they win? I really want some government official to explain to me why they win when the overwhelming majority of people have had spiritual experience. That you can say that there is some evidence of this thing called spirituality which exists.
Yep.
And yet there is no evidence for this biological brain disease. And yet they're, you know, they're forcing it on us. Trillions of dollars a year of state taxpayer dollars are going towards this. You know, not to mention the actual profit, private funding, under the table funding. You know, private, like, here's $100 to a psychiatrist because I don't want a record. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want anything on record, so I'm just going to go cash only. Like, that's not even counted how much money is spent on this. And it's the same as all of these other, you know, on a medical level, that this happens to us medically, too. That they have no problem testing drugs on us and giving us whatever they choose and having the runaround of,
just getting back to bare bones chemistry or even physics, every action has a reaction, and they know that when they concoct all these witches brew and they put in a capsule or a tablet or an IV and all that stuff, it just, and it's so lucrative, it's just, they got a pack of wolves, attorneys will sick after you. And they
really
always get a good doctor or a professor somewhere will say that this, you know, E.I. Lilly is a da 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 da. I shouldn't be naming any names. They'll be after me for defamation.
but it's true.
The one doctor at the U, for example, he was getting $650,000 from this one pharmaceutical company for his research. And he was getting $15,000 for every client. And that same pharmaceutical company that the one Pfizer was trying to acquire them for $119 billion, and they found about the possibility of litigation, they pulled back their bid.
Wow.
It's, you know, $119 billion. What would you do if you had $1
billions and billions of dollars.
$100 billion. It's just chump change to those people. Oh, I can't wrap my mind around what it would be like to have a worth of that. Like, just because money changes people. It's simple as that. They may have every good intention, and
I think it's the money, and I also think it's the professional accolades. That there is a power and prestige that comes along with being one of these people who is looked to by the news or the media or called on for this, and like there's a you know, the power play inside of all of this is so significant that somebody can walk around without inspection, without anybody questioning. I mean, I will name names here, and because I think that I'm right. I'm not doing this because I think that I'm trying to, you know, make something that's not there. I think that I'm just pointing out what is there. So there's like a video, for example, from the Treatment Advocacy Center from Tori that says, you know, that brain diseases, that these are brain diseases, that Freud's idea of, you know, trauma and family and environment is, you know, outdated and ridiculous, and that there is, you know, a biological brain disease. There is no proof of a biological brain disease, yet that is a fundraising tool that the Treatment Advocacy Center uses to both educate people and to fundraise for themselves. And I feel like, as a nonprofit organization, that they are defrauding the public. Like, it is one thing to say, well, you know, maybe someday we will find a biological link and, you know, we don't know the etiology and we've been saying this for centuries and maybe someday we'll have the technology to actually find this biological. But they don't say that. They discount the environment and the family and the responsibility, social responsibility of people, and they say it's a biological brain disease, and that's fraud. I think that his license should be stripped. I think that he should not have the power that he has. I don't believe that he should be able to testify in terms of these kinds of fraud if he is specifically saying that we know that this is a brain disease. We don't know.
No. Because without anything scientific, that's like the Cochrane collaboration that Peter Getsky started. They look at evidence-based medicine. They look at America, the American medical industrial complex. It's all profit before people. There is a cure for cancer. There's an example, that doctor from Poland that had the cure, and he's got the track record to prove it. And the state of Texas tied him up in court for 12 years.
Yeah.
And they're still trying to discredit him.
And there's a lot of money in cancer. There's a lot of money in, you know, this
yeah,
stuff.
It's more profitable
to
treat rather than the cure.
Right. And when you look at, like, what are the alternatives that work for things that are, you know, considered psychiatric, trauma-based kinds of things, healing, support, having a friend, being in an environment that accepts you. These things don't cost a damn thing. You know, being able to talk to somebody, you know, they're not going to make money. They're not going to be patentable. They're not going to make the money that the drugs do. So
look at homeopathic East. It's got to be the healthcare reform that we can live with. It's got to be the East meeting the West and teach people how to meditate rather than medicate. The simple solution, but they'll keep all the distraction and distortion going on and the cover-up and all that. Because they can't. How are you going to put run a meter on yoga and meditation and all that? If they could put a meter on it and they could take a profit at the top, they would have had that a long time ago.
absolutely. And it's disturbing that is basic that we're talking here of.
But it's refreshing, you know, that we are on the same page, and the caller from Washington, D.C., it's just there's three of us, right, for example, three right now, just the three of us, and telling a friend, and a friend telling a friend and all that, we can circle our wagons.
Absolutely, and I think that we just need to keep on speaking out, and that people need to keep speaking out, and, you know, there's a whole bunch of people who have been listening to the show all night, people who have been really quiet and not joining in. If any of you are on the line who want to join in, it's *1 or 1 to join the conversation. But people are listening, and you know, there are a lot of people who call in and talk, but there are even more people who will privately message me or, you know, contact me on the tip line or whatever, you know, to say that they're listening and that they're hearing this and that they appreciate it and that they're and sharing their stories and, you know, not everybody is ready to publicly talk about what's happened to them yet.
No.
You know, and that's a big decision. It's a personal decision. You know, and it's one that should be taken with seriously and with a lot of thought. But for those of us who did it, maybe like myself, maybe a little haphazardly, you know, like 20-some-odd years ago, where now it's, you know, it's unescapable, it becomes a moral imperative to continue to speak out.
Definitely. So we owe it to ourselves. In order for me to keep my marbles in place, I will always stand up and speak out.
Yeah, I think that there's so much riding on it right now, and there are so many people who are struggling and who are really in the most oppressive, horrid conditions and some of them being tortured, people not being allowed to pursue their dreams, pursue their happiness, so people being told that going back to school is too stressful for them or that the life that they had before psychiatry that they just need to forget about because it's never going to happen again for them. And that this is their life now. Their life is to be a mental patient. And if you're out there listening and you're being told this message, don't buy it. You know, do what you have to do. Do it smart and do it, you know, educate yourself about all the options and what alternatives are and do it with thoughtfulness and with intention. But don't buy the idea that you can't have the life that you want because at some point somebody, you know, assigned you in this way. because I know if I would have listened to them, I would be dead right now. I would not be doing anything I'm doing, and I would be dead. And that's a big part of where it is. Tim, I hope I didn't just lose you out there. But I want to thank you for calling in and for sharing all that you did. And I'm going to try to post online your radio show so people would be able to contact you also and be able to maybe call in and talk with you on your show if you like. If you hear this in the next few minutes and want to call back in and make sure that we get people. But it's Tim Nolan, and he's on Blog Talk Radio. And so, Tim, thank you so much for joining us tonight. That was a really great treat, and it was a great conversation. I think in general, just for people to know just an update about the Florida Psychiatric Museum, if you have an idea about something visual to represent our movement or the experiences of what it's like to be turned into a mental patient or something that you think that visually would be a good catch to explain what this experience is like, please get in touch with me because I am putting together a treatment for an exhibit at the Florida Psychiatric Museum and once I submit it, then we'll find out what we'll need to alter in order to make it to their likings. But I want it to be as inclusive as possible and, wide-reaching as I can be. So if you have ideas about something that would be a good fit for a museum exhibit about the history of the Lunatics Liberation Movement or the modern mental patients movement or human rights movement, please let me know. And you can, if you'd like to be on the show or have an idea for a show or know of a human rights violation that you think needs to be exposed, you can call the Talk with Kenny tip line at area code 718-273-8708. I will be back in New York sometime tomorrow night, and so any messages that have been left for me, I'll be picking up then. That's, again, the area code 718-273-8708. And I want to just thank everybody for calling in and for listening in all night. And I'm going to ask you to keep on talking. What's that? This is experimental mobile radio show that's running tonight. And so I just think that there's a lot going on, and there are a lot of ways for people to be involved. There's a lot of upcoming activism in July through the Mental Patients Liberation Alliance, networking through the Mind Freedom Conference in Connecticut, the Youth Power University for young people, and going forward that we will continue to speak out about these things and to, inform people. The Murphyville and Barber, whatever conglomerate reach they come to will be very interesting to see tomorrow or Monday when they get back, I guess, on Monday. So we'll be following that. Tomorrow night will be a regular open line show from 9 to 11 p.m., so I hope that you will consider calling in, and I want to thank you again all for listening, and until next time, talk to you soon.